Welcome to the Music of America podcast, where every week we visit a different state in America and meet a different guest in the music industry. Every day, Monday through Friday, we begin in Alabama and we end in Wyoming. I'm your host, Tom Pollard. Let's talk music here on the Music of America. The Music of America podcast continues today. We're in Smithfield, Rhode Island. As our trek to Rhode Island continues, we're going to meet Tequila Jim. Trevor and Eileen Bild of Ordinary to Extraordinary Life, O-T-E-L, have created, produced, and managed the largest all-original indie music Roku channel, Hotel Music Videos. So think of hotel without the H, okay? They love to give back and help others be seen and heard for their life legacy. They welcome new submissions from a variety of genres and ask you to visit their website. That's hoteluniverse.com, O-T-E-L, universe.com. Click on the What is Roku tab on the drop-down menu, then click on the Roku channels. Complete the submit video form. Roku is seen for about 160 countries now and has a viewership of over 80 million active accounts worldwide. Be sure to add their channel to your Roku menu. Watch and give them a five-star rating, please. And again, it's Hotel Universe, like a hotel without the H, O-T-E-L Universe, www.hoteluniverse.com. Tequila Jim is our guest today from Rhode Island. It's a pretty small state, but I still bet you don't know everybody there, right?
I consider myself an Earth citizen.
Oh, okay.
So we're all really the same species, so I tend not to recognize geographical boundaries.
Gotcha.
And particularly since I perform in throughout New England, so
yeah,
that's just from my old hippie upbringing.
I got it. Hey, this didn't happen overnight, you know. And we both have it. This is audio only, but Jim and I are both sporting our very long hair right now. So, how long have you been playing music?
Oh my goodness! You know, somebody asked me that a few months ago. How long? I guess I've been playing for. In all honesty, I've been playing for 56 years.
Wow. Wow. So since you were 12?
11.
How about that? Pretty close. Pretty close.
Did I do the math right?
I don't know.
I think so.
I'm 68. They'll put you at 67.
Yes, sir.
There we go. Happy birthday again. Yeah.
Thanks, man.
And did you start like a junior high kind of thing, garage band kind of thing, or what?
Well, I was 11 years old.
Yeah.
And my dad came to the United States from Greece after World War II. When he was 21, the Nazis invaded his town. And it's quite a story in and of itself, of course. So anyway, when I was around 11, apparently I started bugging him to buy me a guitar. Now, of course, it was all about AM radio back then. The music was unbelievably great. But the main thing at the time was the Beatles.
Right.
Perhaps you've heard of them. So anyway, I bugged my old man to buy me a guitar. And one day he said, and I remember this clearly, he said, "Let's go." He took me in the vehicle, and we went to downtown Providence, walked into a music store, and the owner came out. It was Silvio DePippo's music store on Federal Hill, and the owner walked out, Mr. DePippo. My father said, "Jimmy wants a guitar," and I said, "I play this way." Because I'm left-handed,
mm-hmm.
Absolutely 100% left-handed. And I said, "I play this way," you know, showing my arms in the left-hand guitar position.
Right.
And the gentleman said, "Well, we don't have any here. We'll have to order one." Now, there were guitars everywhere. I mean, there were about 8,000 guitars hanging from ceilings and walls everywhere.
Yeah.
So the owner said, "Well, we don't have one. We'll have to order one." And my dad said, "Just get one that's here now. So I did. And it wasn't a very, you know, good quality guitar. It was a Stella. And he bought me a chord book for $1. I believe I still have it. Well, and what I did was I forced myself to learn. I followed the chord book and I forced myself to learn against my natural hand. So that's why I play right-handed.
No kidding. One of my best friends is a southpaw, and he plays a left-handed guitar. But he introduced me to like Doyle Bramall, who used to play with what was the Double Trouble? That was Stevie Ray.
Oh, really? Stevie Ray.
And he plays takes a right-handed guitar, plays it left-handed, and plays the chords upside down. Basically,
yes.
That's how he learned to play. So
now, cool. If I could have called Jimi Hendrix or somebody back then, I mean, yeah. I didn't know. I didn't know you could flip it, change strings, and all these different things, you know, flip the strings. So I ended up being right-handed.
Do you ever try and teach yourself left-handed, too? So you could
absolutely just, not, no.
Really? That'd be funny. You
no, there's no point in that.
Like this, and flip it and go like this, and flip it and go like this.
Well, I play other instruments as well. I mean, I'm completely self-taught, so I play bass and harmonica and some dulcimer and electric guitar and so on.
Yeah.
But it doesn't seem like a good investment of time. You know, I'd rather try to get better at being right-handed.
Uh-huh. Especially if you've been doing it this way for 50, 60
years. Oh, my
years.
Goodness. Oh, yeah. This it's natural now.
So
but it was a struggle. It was a struggle. Yeah. When I remember sitting in the porch. It was, in Providence and just laboring. You know, and because it wasn't a great guitar, it was painful. The strings were like, telephone cables, and the action was horrible. But whatever, man, I plowed through it. You know, yeah. I struggled, but
I get it. And when did you start performing? Like, did you start writing immediately, or had you already been writing?
Oh my goodness, that's a great question. Because of the Beatles phenomenon, me and a few buddies in the neighborhood, we got some cigar boxes and we fashioned guitars out of them. I think we named ourselves some band. And we were screwing around writing, in quotes, writing songs.
Yeah.
And I remember a song. I remember the melody I wrote of a song when I was a young kid, maybe 10 or 11.
Uh-huh.
But it's always been music with me, since forever.
Yeah. So then take us through it. You went, you got your cigar box band, you started that. When did you start getting more serious about music and getting more serious about your instrumentation and more serious about it as a vocation?
Well, it just evolved year after year after year. By the time I was in junior high, I was playing regularly, but not with a band. I just kept working at it. And then in the summer at the local playground, some of the freaks would come by with their guitars,
and
I would watch them. A couple of these guys were good, and they'd just be jamming and jamming and jamming. And I think by the time I was around 18 or 19, I was in a very serious band. It was a three-piece power band, and by that time, I'd switched to bass. And we made, we did all right. Like, we were based out of Providence.
Uh-huh.
And we get some reviews in Europe with Kerrang. You may be familiar with that magazine out of the UK.
Yeah. This would have been 74, 75, around then.
Yeah. Or even later. And we were together for quite a while. Like, well, oh boy.
Well, you were touring worldwide already at that point, right?
Not exactly.
No.
No, but we were in New York City. I mean, we played at CBGB's.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and we got several kind of independent record company offers for albums and things like that. And we were just, I don't know how to put this. I want to put this gently. The leader of the band didn't necessarily make the best decisions business-wise.
Okay.
Yeah, I'll just leave it at that.
That happens in bands. Yeah, we'll just.
Yeah. And there was a lot of things were squandered because of ego and just not having a good business sense, let's say.
So did you break away and start doing solo then, or did you just...
You know, I broke... That thing dissolved, and I had a family, and I ended up going into a pretty good career, supporting a family, but I always kept the music.
Yeah.
And I put together a cover band. I had a few cover bands, but I had some really kick-ass cover bands, you know?
Yeah.
And I played bass. I had a great guitar player, Anthony Bucacci, and great drummer, Bongo Bob. And we were fronted by a female singer and blah, blah, blah. But I was always active in music.
Yeah.
I wasn't really intensely doing any songwriting. I mean, I'd come up with a few things.
Right.
But I moved up in the ranks of management in this corporation, and I exposed wrongdoing. So they decided they needed to destroy me. Because I stepped on the wrong guy's toes.
Yeah.
And it took him a couple of years. So after they destroyed me, I was pretty much devastated. I ended up, I had a heart attack. I suffered from some really deep and dark depression.
Wow. A
couple of suicide attempts, electric shock therapy, you know, stuff like that. And I crawled out of it. And I don't know what happened, but the songwriting, I mean, I started kind of almost, I want to say prolifically songwriting. Like I almost completely reinvented myself as solely a musician, nothing else.
Is that when the stage name Tequila Jim came out?
You know what? You know what, buddy? You know, that actually started with the cover band.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah. I didn't give myself that name. I didn't want the name. I didn't like the name. And I kind of still don't like the name. But it happened. And I used to drink massive amounts of tequila. And that was with the cover band. So I want to say I was in the late 90s, around 2001, two, in there.
Mm-hmm.
And so anyway, fast forward again, about seven or 8 years ago, you know, I was crawling out of this, you know, really dark place, and songs started coming to me. And I'd never really played solo. as a solo acoustic guy. Right. Never. And so here I was, oh, I don't know, around 60, even a little older. And I just started on a new venture being a solo guy.
Yeah.
Acoustic, from mostly what I was previously a bass player in a band. And that's when I recorded my first album called Lost Along the Way. And that's the track on the album is what I ended up naming the album. And it's a pretty emotional song, you know. It's actually a plea to God and Jesus to lend me a hand, I suppose.
Yeah.
And you know, time went on. I recorded my second and third albums. I got some really awesome critical reviews on these albums.
Cool.
And I'm almost, I've got my fourth album almost ready to go. Some mixing and tweaking and editing.
Right.
But I got a bunch of new songs I'm really excited about.
Well, the song, first song of yours we're going to listen to is a song called Be There. Is that off the new album or is it off one of the old
You know
albums?
What? That's off my second album.
Okay.
And when you asked about particular tracks, I immediately thought of that one because of every song I've ever written or practiced or learned, that was far much more work than anything I've ever played. Not every day, but it took me a period, you know, typically I'll write a song within a day or two or three.
Right.
You know, add some words, change a few things, and there it is. Not Be There. Be There, it's more intricate. It's a drop D tuning. And I almost gave up on it three or four times.
Really?
I always had this bass. Oh, yeah. I always had this bass. I was so frustrated. And I had this basic riff, but I wanted it to, you know, it needed to change and transition into another part and different things.
Well, to me, it's got a real strong Eastern music flavor.
Right.
It's like a sitar sound.
You know,
I love that.
You know, I'll tell you what, you know, that's a good point. You know, a lot of people will say, well, my favorite happy place is the beach. My happy place is the recording studio.
Oh, okay.
Period. Because I believe I make magic in the recording studio.
Yeah.
And as you astutely point out, there are some sounds that came out of that guitar, you know, that weren't planned.
Uh-huh.
And there's like a certain vibe and a feel that give it like a little Eastern flavor. That was just a coincidence, really.
That
to me is the magic.
Yeah.
But also, let me give credit to Stephen Stills, because the finger picking in that song is directly influenced by Stephen Stills.
Okay.
Things like 4 and 20 and Treetop Flyer.
Treetop Flyer, yeah.
Wow. Yeah. You know, so that's, my God, I always loved his songwriting and that style of playing. In fact, I learned all about different kinds of tuning from Stephen Stills.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, I'm self-taught. I have no formal training. Now, the other guy involved in influencing that song is George Harrison.
Uh-huh.
George Harrison. And that's where that Eastern vibe comes from. But there are some things, you know, a lot of George's work is absolutely hypnotic to me. So even in terms of the lyrics of Be There, and I guess what I'm trying to say is that song exists because of Stephen Stills and George Harrison.
Yeah.
That's where that song emanates from. The influences of those two, the Harris,
George Harrison and Ravi Shankar influence in there.
Yeah, yeah.
Listen to it again now and listen for that Stephen Stills finger picking style for sure. Well, let's give it a listen. The song is called Be There. Our guest, Tequila Jim, here on the Music of America podcast.
Time will come when it's time to go. Only time will tell. Only time can know.
The song is called Be There. Tequila Jim, our guest here on the Music of America podcast. I'm your host, Tom Pollard, who lives in Vermont sometimes and sometimes in Missouri. And speaking of Vermont, River Ridge Farms in Jeffersonville, Vermont. Vermont's recreation lover's dream is a gorgeous vacation rental nestled in the Green Mountains of Vermont. River Ridge Farms is an escape to everything wonderful Vermont has to offer. It's a historic farmhouse set atop 16 acres of fields with mountainous views, a pasture, a pond, tree-lined river frontage. Go enjoy this beautiful spot right in the heart of the Green Mountain State, along with the multiple nearby ski and mountain resorts and breweries, hiking and biking trails and tourist activities like that. The spot is also unique due to its multiple mountain views and the resident farm animals. So when you make a reservation, River Ridge Farms in Jeffersonville, Vermont, talk to the host, Diana, about interacting with the farm animals. You'll love it as much as they do. Or just do a regular old farm stay in this comfortable, modern farmhouse, which sleeps 11 guests easily. There's enough space to throw events or just relax and rejuvenate in the beautiful Vermont landscape. Check them out. River Ridge Farms, Jeffersonville. You have to include Jeffersonville, or you're going to find a dozen or more River Ridge Farms if you're looking them up on Google. Same with Airbnb. Specify River Ridge Farms, Jeffersonville. River Ridge Farms, Vermont's recreation lover's dream. So I joked earlier about you traveling around the world, Tequila Jim, and but you have toured. You said you've been to New York, but how far in your years of doing music with bands and solo work, how far out have you gone from Rhode Island?
After my first album, Donna Halper, I was fortunate enough to be connected with Donna Halper, and she was instrumental in discovering Rush, of all things. And I really love the band Rush. But anyway, she had a connection in Indiana with the radio person there. And I did travel to Indiana several years ago to do a radio show and perform at several gigs out that way. But other than that, my territory is New England, and there's plenty of fertile ground here.
Do you do the I call it the Highway 1 circuit up in Maine, where you go like from Wells to Kittery to Wells to Kennebunkport up to Bar Harbor?
Yeah, that's a great point. Yeah, well, I hustled to book gigs, and I mean, I hustle, and I think I'm worthy, and it all boils down to whatever the GPS lady tells me, wherever it says go left, right, go straight, that's what I do.
Okay.
And I end up somewhere, could be New Hampshire, Maine, Rhode Island, Mass, or Connecticut, typically. And I'll end up where they let me use their electricity and be the center of attention and play music.
Yeah. Because a lot of places, like in resort towns, like that Highway 1 resort, they're not really friendly toward original music. You know, they want to have people in there. They want to hear.
Oh, I know.
Brown Eyed Girl 70 times a year. You know,
I can't believe you said Brown. I crack on that all the time.
I hate that song. I used to love it as a kid. I loved it as a kid, but when you got to play it, and everybody expects.
Oh, I know.
Keep your hands to yourself. The Georgia Satellites. That's another one I can't stand that we had to do. You know.
But, well, it boils down to in my universe. I mean, I've made announcements right at the beginning. Look, if you want to hear Brown Eyed Girl or Sweet Caroline or Wagon Wheel or American Pie, you're not going to hear that tonight. You're not going to hear any of that tonight. And if I'm playing covers, I generally go into some really deep cuts from, let's say, our roots.
Yeah.
You and me.
Right.
You know, I mean, I'm really quite proud of it. And I can't tell you how many times I've been approached with, hey, man, I really love your song list. Your songs I haven't heard in years.
Uh-huh.
So that's my covers.
I've always thought a great band, a great cover band, would be called C-Sides, you know? And you don't play the A-side, you don't play the B-side, you play the C-side, like, which would be like, we can do something by the Monkees or Crosby, Stills, Nash, but it wouldn't be something you're familiar with. It'd be a deep cover, you know, or like a deep cut of an album or something. I always thought that would be fun because it would sound like new music, but have a certain familiarity about it.
Right. So, well, you run into people like you and I, as you know, there are music aficionados like us in the audience from time to time, and they know exactly what's going on. They get me.
Right. The Southpaw I referred to earlier that I played with for a while, he's still a really good buddy of mine, Almost Cut My Hair was a song that we
God, that's awesome.
Curtis Lowe was one of the songs. People would request, you know, Skynyrd, and I don't want to do Freebird. I don't want to do Simple Man. You know, I don't want to do Sweet Home Alabama. We'd do Ballad of Curtis Lowe. That we're giving them, you know, we're giving them what they want, Skynyrd, but we're not giving them the big hit, you know, the big hits or whatever. So that was kind of fun. It's fun for us as performers too, you know. We got to get together and do this.
You know, yeah, I think so. You know, there's always some character out there that yells out Freebird, Freebird, you know,
right.
And I'm ready for it because I'll just respond with, if you stick around, the very last song I do will be Stairway to Freebird.
I love it. Stairway to Freebird. That's perfect.
Yeah, the old Stairway to Freebird.
And do you do a medley of them, or do you just
no? I just making just that shit up.
Yeah, okay, yeah, that's funny. That's
just nonsense.
That's funny. You know, that's like a great
I'm not a big country fan. Country music, I'm really not. As I mentioned earlier, before the show, and. So every now and then, somebody will come up, some guy will come up and say, hey, man, you know any country? And I'll say, which country?
That's right.
You know.
I know Yugoslavia.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
It's not there anymore. But
you know, here's a nice Tequila Jim story. A couple of years ago, during the summer, I was playing at a place in New Hampshire. And I was loading the equipment in, and there was a woman outside smoking in front of the laundromat next door. Mm-hmm. And she says, hey, Tequila Jim, do you know any booze? And I said, ma'am, I know all the colors.
Well, speaking of covers and cover songs, one cover song I like to play is Into the Mystic by Van Morrison.
Beautiful. Oh, sure.
Great song to jam on. And our next song of yours is Into the Void.
Oh, yeah.
So it kind of flowed there. I want to bring that up. So is there a correlation between Into the Void and Into the Mystic? It's kind of a similar journey.
No, there isn't. Because when I think of the word void, I mean, turn off your mind, relax, and float downstream, you know, surrender to the void.
Yeah.
John Lennon, Tomorrow Never Knows.
I got you. Okay.
But anyway, honestly, the major meaning of that song is birth. I'm in the womb. It's the void we go. To the void we go. Starring in a picture show. So the picture show is the sonogram.
Oh, I got you.
Light and sound consume the air. Well, you're in this beautiful, safe, warm, you're fed for 9 months.
Right.
And then you're just ejected. And there's light and sound. How did I become aware? I mean, every, you know, lyric in there has to do with the beauty of the womb And then should I laugh or should I scream?
Right.
I mean, this is crazy. What am I doing here? Why aren't I back in? So I'm into the void now. Things are never what they seem when you're pushed to the extreme. And that's where that song's at, man. It's all about birth.
That's so heavy and cool. Mm-hmm. I want to listen to it again now. And we're going, and we're going to. Tequila Jim,
right.
Our guest here, Tequila Jim Smith, Rhode Island, and the song we're talking about right now is called Into the Void. Into the Void with Tequila Jim here on the Music of America podcast. Just a little north of Jim is Portsmouth, New Hampshire. Well, Portsmouth Music and Arts Center, PMAC, is a nonprofit organization dedicated to building community through its arts. The PMAC, or at PMAC, The music and visual arts program are available for ages 4 through adults, including private lessons, music ensembles, free art exhibits, and other events. PMAC builds pathways for education and engagement, creating a safe environment where students of all ages can grow, excel, and achieve their full creative potential. There's a place for everyone at PMAC. PMAC believes that access to the arts is a fundamental right, regardless of age, income, or identity. To that end, PMAC's Community Access Program is designed to ensure all members in the community can experience the joy and transformational benefits of music and art. One element of the Community Access Program is tuition aid, which provides financial assistance to families in need of private music and art lessons, as well as music ensemble participation and art classes. PMAC, that's the Portsmouth Music and Arts Council. Visit them at www.pmaconline.org to learn more. Every once in a while, you got to do one of these little public service announcements to help promote the arts, right, Joe?
Oh, my God. Portsmouth, New Hampshire is
amazing.
Absolutely a beautiful, beautiful town.
Mm-hmm. I moved to Vermont 9 years ago and absolutely fell in love with the Northeast. And I'm not a big fan of Boston, but I love
about
everything else about the Northeast, you know. But I will say this. I did go to a hockey game where the Blues played I'm from St. Louis. So the St. Louis Blues played the Boston Bruins in
really?
The first Stanley Cup Finals game that I've ever been in my entire life. We lost, but I did get a beer poured on me by a Boston fan, so I felt like I was inducted, you know?
You're christened.
Christened, that's the word. Thank you. Yeah. Now, you're not a sports person, right?
Oh, absolutely. Not really a hockey person.
Oh, well, then you're not really a sports
person. I love sport. I was an athlete when I was a kid. Oh, yeah, man. I mean, well, for me, it's all about football. I mean, the whole country wants football.
Yeah.
NFL. But I'll take baseball, too. Absolutely.
Are you a Red Sox? Red Sox?
Yeah. Well, you know what? Karl Marx said, religion is the opiate of the people.
Yeah.
Tequila Jim says, professional sports is the opiate of the people. So.
And Groucho Marx said, these are my values. If you don't like them, I got others.
No, I mean, in terms of sports, look. It's all bastardized and it's watered down. It's commercialized and it's horrible. But if I need a good nap, there's nothing like a baseball game. Man.
I used to have a pest control company in St. Louis. And we used to drill for termites, you know, drill through the concrete and stuff.
Wow.
And nothing makes a termite job go by faster than a baseball game.
There you go.
And it just, because it kept you enrolled, and otherwise you're doing this mundane work of drilling through dirt, drilling through concrete, and putting in pesticide. And not that that gets done that much anymore, but that's the way we were doing it back in the 80s and 90s, you know?
Yeah.
I'd just slap on my headphones on a Cardinal game, and
we
always dealt with them in the summertime. But yeah.
Yeah, just drones on and on and on.
Yeah.
I mean, but really, it's ridiculous because, you know, these guys, it's not like they're your family or your friends. They move from team to team for millions and millions of dollars, and I'm rooting for them because geographically that's the city closer to. I mean, it's ridiculous.
I always get a kick out of it, and I do it myself, but I refer to myself or my St. Louis Blues or my St. Louis Blues. The New Orleans Saints. New Orleans Saints is my favorite football team, so it's my New Orleans Saints. You know, I'm not out on the
field. Absolutely.
You know?
Well, here's a good one, buddy. I was playing at this really nice place during the summer, and they had four big screen televisions hung up high ahead of me there. And the Red Sox were playing. And it was the bottom of the ninth inning, and they lost. So I watched the Red Sox lose four times on four different TVs.
How torturous.
Yeah. That was ugly. Yeah.
One of my favorite pictures I have, and we'll get back into music here in a minute, but my son-in-law grew up in Westport, Connecticut. Okay. So he grew up as a Boston Bruins fan. my daughter grew up in St. Louis, big Cardinals fan. And one of my favorite pictures I have of them is they were going to their first ever World Series game together. So she's wearing a Red Sox jersey or t-shirt underneath her Molina jersey. And he's wearing a Cardinals t-shirt under his Pedroias jersey.
Oh, really?
Really, really cool. Yeah. And they're holding up their tickets, the World Series tickets. It's just a great
Snapchat. Well, see, that's beautiful. You know?
Yeah.
That's the best thing about sports.
Yeah, it's pretty fun. Brings people together. So we've got one more song of yours we've got to talk about. And I just want you to talk, because I keep falling into the Who song, Who Are You? But it's not Who Are You, it's Who You Are is the name of the song.
Yeah. Good point. Well, first of all, you may be familiar with this guy, Bob Dylan, and how he was, the Woody Guthrie stories in terms of the influence on Bob Dylan and all that, and when he went to see him when he was dying. I mean, very fascinating. But he picked up on a lot of chords from Woody. And one of the favorite things, one of the devices Bob uses, Bob Dylan, is this. Now, this is just audio, but.
Yeah, that doesn't really play well on this medium.
Because okay.
Sound compresses and all that stuff. But.
All right, I'm sorry. But anyway, I'm kind of copying a Bob Dylan lick from She Belongs to Me, his song Sheba, and it's an old, classic, deep cut.
Uh-huh.
Now, when that song came out, I mean, remember, now, I was a child. I was 7 or 8 years old, but I've been immersed in this music thing forever. Anyway, I thought that would be a pretty cool song to cover at gigs. And so first of all, in the song Who You Are, I'm doing this little GC riff right from the beginning, the intro, and that's a direct, I nicked it directly off of Dylan, She Belongs to Me.
Uh-huh.
Then after that, I was on my own. But it's really, it's the opening track of my third album called American. And I suppose in some ways that album is, I want to say, I don't want this to sound inappropriate, but I look at it as my Abbey Road.
Really?
I kind of do, yeah, because there's a lot of diverse stuff on there. There's a lot of curveballs. There's not a lot of redundancy. There's different instruments and styles of music. But anyway, getting back to Who You Are, it's autobiographical. When I was in my 20s, I had cancer. Mm-hmm. I've had depression, a couple of suicide attempts. I had a heart attack about a year or so ago. I was in intensive care in Boston having emergency surgery. They cut through my back to get at all this fluid that was amassed outside my, all kinds of fun stuff like this,
Wow.
As a matter of fact, as I speak to you right now, at the end of March, I have cancer again.
Oh, no.
And I've been kind of recently diagnosed, and here we go again. But in terms of the song, I don't know how I made it this far. I don't know if I'll be here tomorrow. I think I'll go pick up a guitar. Better to lead and never follow. And that's me. That's who I am.
And that's the song. That's really cool, man. I love that.
Thank you. I mean, that's who I am. And I think I know who I am. And I've been crazy, you know, and you know, the second verse, some people tell me I push it too far. That may be so, but I don't beg or borrow. I'm still searching for my shining star to find what's true and free from sorrow. And
dude, you're a poet. You're not a songwriter.
Well,
you're both.
Well, hold on, buddy. Hold on. I'm a very, very proud English major.
Oh, okay.
Okay. I am a writer, and I love the language, and I love words. I love constructing lyrics and poems and writing. So I'm a singer-songwriter, let's say.
There you go.
Your music and words.
That's right.
And
you tell the story two different ways. Like we were talking about with the first song, Be There, about how that George Harrison, Ravi Shankar influence came across. And that has nothing to do really with the story, but it does, but it doesn't. You know, it's saying its own thing with the style of the music that it is.
You know, and the lyrics, I mean, can we jump on that for a second? The lyrics would be there, or should we just
let's
move
stay with
on?
Who, let's just move. We're
okay,
wrap
okay.
Up here and we get to this.
All right, but anyway, so who you are, my message is basically, I think I know who I am. Do you know who you are? You know, I mean, look around every time you go out of the house, and, you know, on the roads, or, I mean, look at the, you know, debauchery out there and craziness and irresponsible people and so on. But, you know, people, you know, when you think about Facebook, there's a great example. It appears to me that millions of people have created a persona of who they want to be, and they portray it on Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not really who they are. It's just this, digital, computerized, projection. And I think that's very sad.
Yeah.
And in a sense, it's pathetic. Now, I use Facebook, but only to promote my gigs and my music. And I didn't really have any choice but to jump into that. But anyway, yeah, man, I think it's a really cool song. And it was just the perfect song as the opening cut, I thought, for my third album, American.
Well, we're going to give it a listen here. The song is Who You Are. Tequila Jim, our guest here, and his last of three songs on the Music America podcast, Who You Are.
If I'm being
song called Who You Are with Tequila Jim, our guest here on the Music of America podcast. And Jim, my favorite part of the show, because I don't have to do anything. I call it shameless shameless self-promotion. You just sit there and
lazy?
Tell us. I can't help it. I'm retired and I'm
you lazy SOB. No, all right, look. It's not natural for me to do shameless self-promotion, but okay.
Have at it.
My new album is being manufactured, and in the very, very near future, we'll be streaming on all major platforms. And
what's it called?
You know, it's called, unless there's a last-minute change, it's right. Called Truth Isn't Truth. Truth Isn't Truth. But I'm debating on flipping it over to Time War. Which one do you like better?
Well, because I'm an advanced age, I'd go with Time War.
You'd like that, huh?
I like that a lot because my whole life I've been in battling with time essence, the essences of time and everything, you know, got to do this. I have time to do this. I've only got so much time for this. I got to get this because I only have time. Time is the one thing that when it's gone, it's gone. Can't get it back.
You know, that's exactly right. Look, when I was young, you know, people would tell me, I mean, even since I was a little boy, I was the golden boy. I was going to be something amazing and I was going to be great. And I have all these special God-given qualities. But the truth is, in my youth, I wasted a lot of time once I hit the teenage years and into my 20s. And at this stage of my life, I don't want to waste time anymore. I will not, I refuse to waste time. I mean, if I have to doze off, that's not wasting time. I have to do that. If I have to eat, it's something I have to do.
Right.
But in the meantime, I can see, and as everyone should see, that time, as you suggest, time is a finite quantity. So I'm just trying to, you know, I'm drug free, I'm alcohol free, and I'm feeling very creative for several years now, almost like I did when I was a child. But anyway, you should look out for the new album.
And where do we find everything about you? You've got a website now, right?
You know what? Yeah, tequilajim.com is one way to get at me. Or there's this thing called, perhaps you've heard of the internet.
Oh, I've heard of that. The new thing.
Yeah, right? Yeah. Al Gore invented it. And if you were to go on this, you go to see this Mr. Google fellow and you type in Tequila Jim, all kinds of stuff is going to pop up related to me.
Okay. Just as long as there's not like 5 Tequila Jims out there in the country or in the world.
No. Amazing. Well, if there are, they haven't been as productive as me in terms of music. No, I mean, that's a good question, but there absolutely aren't. If you just plug that thing in there, man, you're going to see a lot of my work come up.
Go ahead. Sorry.
No, it's all right, buddy. And, you know, forgive me here, please forgive me in advance, but, you know, people know it as Facebook. I call it Sit on My Facebook. and if you look up Tequila Jim, I'm also active on there. And that will be showing all my, you know, spring and summer dates and what's going on with me. And it's completely political and religious, and you know, I don't use it for any social commentary or any nothing like that.
Right.
Just about my passion, which is music.
You get merch, t-shirts, stickers, buttons, stuff like that.
Oh, as a matter of fact, yeah, I do have I have three my first three albums are on CD, those are for sale. And I do have t-shirts. I have Tequila Jim t-shirts. featuring, of all people, Bonnie Parker.
Oh, she's kidding.
Holding a pistola and smoking a cigar.
Yeah.
And there you go. That's,
oh, wonderful.
That's, yeah, wonderful. Yeah. A mass murderer, yeah.
On well, a they've t-shirt. Got the- They got a little history in Missouri. My first radio gig was in Joplin, Missouri.
Oh, yeah.
And they had a big shootout down in Webb City, which is just outside of Joplin, That was my first radio gig.
Right.
So, yeah, I've got a real soft spot in my heart for you know, Bonnie and Clyde.
Me too, Tom. Are you my doppelganger? Tom, what the hell's going on here, man?
We're born in the same month, man.
I've done a lot of research on Bonnie and Clyde.
Yeah.
And I just think it's fascinating, incredible, you know, that era. And you know, I mean, I've read the books and I've studied them.
Yeah.
And there's a book I want to recommend to you.
Okay.
Man. Oh, my God. Bonnie and Clyde. I'd have to look it up and get back to you. It's been several years since I read it.
Well, let me give you one more little Bonnie and Clyde trivia that relates to me indirectly. So the movie with Warren Beatty and Faye Dunaway, right?
Right.
All right, who plays JT?
Oh, I forget.
JT's the getaway car driver, right?
Right.
Very unknown actor. His name is Michael J. Pollard. My brother is Michael Joseph Pollard. No relation. But really? in the movie, the guy plays, I think it's JT, yeah. JT's the guy that drives the getaway car. And
all right. Go ahead.
That's it. So that was it. That was it.
Are you sitting down?
I'm sitting down.
All right, good. Listen to this, kid. Listen to me, bro. Last week, I played at a nice restaurant. Sunday afternoon gig. Really nice place. Nice stage, nice people, and it was busy. And people liked me, and I was respected, and it was just a great vibe, okay?
Yeah.
There was an older woman, let's say, sitting with a friend at a table, well, right in front of me. And she saw my t-shirt with Bonnie Parker.
Uh-huh.
And when I went on break, she called me over, and man, this is a trip.
Yeah.
I kind of got chills. All right. She said, my aunt, now she was old,
mm-hmm.
you know, maybe around 80. And she said, my aunt roomed with Bonnie Parker.
Oh, wow.
Okay. And she was from Texas, Tom.
Yeah.
She had the Texas drawl and everything,
right.
You know. And, you know, she was a straight talker, one of those.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she was no, flaming liberal East Coast gal. She was from Texas. So she said, my aunt, they were in a boarding house, and she roomed with Bonnie Parker.
Wow.
I froze. And she said, do you know what my aunt told me about Bonnie? And I said, oh, please tell me. She said, she was very quiet and shy, but a snappy dresser.
How funny. So
that's the story, bro.
That's great.
At a gig in Massachusetts.
That's hilarious. That's some of the greatest stories. One of the best things about this thing, too. You know, you get to hear these wonderful stories.
Adventure.
Well, Jim, this has been a blast. Thank you so much.
Yeah, same here, Tom.
All right,
thank you for all you do, man. God bless you.
Hey, thank you. Tequila Jim, our guest here on the Music of America podcast. We wrap up Rhode Island tomorrow with a Creedence Clearwater Revival tribute band with a female vocalist, Kelly and the Poor Boys, tomorrow here on the Music of America podcast. You've been listening to the Music of America podcast. If you like today's show, please go to the website at www.musicofamericapod.com or our Music of America podcast Facebook page. Like us and follow the show and episodes. We tally the votes of all our shows, and the most listened to shows will be rebroadcast on our best of shows at the end of the season.
I look forward to having you with us again and listening to the Music of America.